Hello, my name is DeMarco Carpenter, and I'm a charismatic person.
Hi, this is Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence, a podcast dedicated to spreading awareness of wrongful conviction. Today, we're going to hear the story of DeMarco Carpenter, who was 17 when he went to prison, and almost 40 when he was released for a crime he didn't commit. Also, I wanted to mention to you another podcast I love. It's called They Walk Among Us. I'm going to play the trailer for you at the end of the episode so you can see what it's all about. Oh, and also, don't forget to check out my new show, Convicted, a 10-episode long-form show. You can download it on any podcast app. This episode is being brought to you by SimpliSafe, Storyworth, and Casper. All sponsors that I love and appreciate dearly because they help me bring you free episodes and keep me from living in my car. If you can't financially support our sponsors, please give them a shout out on social media and let them know that you appreciate their support for the show. I used to work at a summer camp near Racine, Wisconsin, and I just heard about a story from the area. A house caught on fire and no one was home. And it took a while for anyone to notice at all. And it resulted in $40,000 in damages. Priceless items, gone. Family heirlooms, charred. If you're not there when a fire starts, who will be there to save your home? For SimpliSafe home security user Trisha, SimpliSafe was there. While she was on vacation, her home caught fire. And she was three states away. But SimpliSafe alerted the fire department immediately when her smoke detectors went off. And they got there in time to save her home. SimpliSafe's round-the-clock professional security monitoring is just $14.99 a month. Get 24/7 connection to dispatch and lightning-fast response times in emergencies with SimpliSafe Home Security. Order today and you'll get my special 10% discount. So go now to simplisafe.com/innocence. That's simplisafe.com/innocence for 10% off your home security system. simplisafe.com/innocence. I have to admit, my interview with DeMarco is just a little less formal than usual, especially near the end. And it's because he's just such a funny character with a great personality. So, this is DeMarco's story.
My life, I've always been in sports. I had my uncles around to, first off, let me start with my grandmother. My grandmother, she was always in church and she installed morals and discipline. And my grandmother and grandfather, you know, they were my role models, you know. And then the way my uncles were, you know, I never knew my dad, you know. So my uncles, they were my role models. So they made sure they stayed on my case. They made sure I did what I had to do, what I needed to do, my schoolwork and all that. So, you know, so I was very into sports. I have an uncle, he ran track. So I was into running track, football, basketball. Basketball is where I thrived at, you know. That was it. That was everything, you know. So I love basketball. And I always thought that I would make it to the NBA. But, you know, my uncle, once he had his family, he kind of had to put me to the side, so to speak, and go focus on his family, his wife and his kids. So after they start having their kids and then, you know, I'm like not really caring as much about sports, you know, and, you know, that was my role model. It's like I'm not saying they turned my back on them, but they have their obligations. So, you know, then I'm not saying that I was in the streets, but I kind of was in the streets basically, you know, and I stopped playing sports or going to practice. And, you know, I've never been in a gang, but the people in my neighborhood was gang members and I socialized with some gang members. And, you know, that's where my involvement came. And if coming from ghetto poverty slums, you're going to be friends with those guys that you grew up with. So, you know, I've never been in a gang, but, you know, I had friends that was in the gang and it was the turning point for me. one day I'm walking down the street, you know, not a care in the world. Just, you know, my auntie stayed down the street. I'm going to my grandma's house, and I have on blue. The next thing I know, five guys surrounded me, and they started, you know, pounding me, basically, like telling me not to wear this. So after that, I'm like, wow, you know, that's when I was in the sixth grade, and that's when I realized that, you know, that was my introduction into the gang, basically, you know. And it was people that saw this, they witnessed this, and no one came to my rescue. So it's like, you know, you're going to be a part of this or you're not. So, you know, basically I was a part of that.
So I'm from Hicktown, America. Can you tell me what it means to wear blue? Like, why was wearing blue an issue?
Oh, yeah, because I come from the side of town where blue is prohibited. Bloods were red and Crips were blue. So blue was prohibited in that neighborhood that I come from.
That's just, it's so unbelievable to me that you would get beat up for the colors that you were wearing.
No, it is. It really is unbelievable, because I look back like, wow, a color, you know, color changes people's lives. And if this is what you grow up knowing and, you know, come accustomed to, you know, being a part of this. So it's some people's livelihood and it makes no sense at all. But I'm like, wow, I look back and like over a color.
Can you tell me what the crime was that they accused you of?
It was a murder conviction. Yes, a young lady got killed. It was a drive-by shooting. A guy drove by into a crowd and shot into a crowd. He shot the young lady, killed her, and striking two other people, one guy in the buttocks and another guy in the arm. And the guy that got shot in the buttocks, he, you know, his initial statements was he didn't see anything. He didn't witness anything. But later on, he said that he was coerced into making those statements saying it was us. But it's obvious he didn't see anything. He was shot in the buttocks because he was running away. That's what his statements was. He ran away from the crime, from the shots, and he got shot in the buttocks. So how did you witness anything if you got shot in the buttocks?
Is that the same guy who said that the bullets actually matched his gun?
No, Michael Wilson is the guy. He's the culprit who actually committed this crime. He committed the crime, and when the police, Michael Huff, went to his house, and he literally wrestled Michael Wilson down and took the murder weapon from him. And the car used it. Then the drive-by was in his front yard. They confiscated that. But Michael Wilson said that me and Malcolm did it, and we returned the gun and the car to him after we done it.
Oh, my gosh. So they got the guy, they got the gun, but they believed the guy with the murder weapon that someone else did it?
Yes, it's kind of crazy.
Do you remember when they arrested you?
Yes, I do. November the 12th, 1994. It was 2 days after the crime had occurred.
Did you know why they were there? Like, what they were arresting you for?
No, I didn't. You know, I was actually at my auntie's house, and, you know, they asked if they could take me downtown and ask some questions. My mom was with me, my mom and my auntie. We went downtown, or we went to the East Precinct. And they started asking me the questions. But what's crazy is when we went through the doors, I saw Michael Wilson, the same guy who had got caught with the murder weapon. I saw him. You know, he's from my neighborhood. We wasn't the best of friends, but I know him well. So we said, what's up? And I went on to the other room, and then that's when they started asking me questions. And when they said something about a Karen Summers and murder, I'm like, hey, no, I'm willing to take a polygraph test. I didn't do any of this, and I'm willing to have forensic ballistic tests. You know, you can do this on me because it determines if you fired a weapon in the last, I think, 48 hours. I'm willing to do this. So, you know, none of that was ever done.
Did they offer you an attorney at any point?
No, they offered me a public defender. I couldn't afford an attorney, but, you know, a public defender was appointed to me, just like everyone else who can't afford an attorney.
Did they give you bail? Like, did they set a bail?
No, I was not given the bail.
How did you have a relationship with your public defender?
I did see him three times the whole time. He came to visit me three times within the whole 18 months that I was in the county jail, not including a trial. I saw him at trial, but other than that, I only saw him three times.
So at the trial, well, first, what was the trial like? Were you because I know that you had co-defendants. Were you tried as co-defendants or did you have like independent trials? How did that work?
No, we were tried together.
You tried together? The same judge and was it a judge or a jury?
Same judge and jury.
There were witnesses, in quotation marks, that said they saw the shots being fired.
Yes, and one of those witnesses was the same guy that got shot in the buttocks. They were both in the county jail facing murder, not murder, but shooting with intent charges and drug charges. And in exchange for their testimony, their charges were dropped.
Overall, how effective do you think your attorney was at trying to defend you? Like, what was his defense?
Well, I'm not sure what his defense was. The only thing I can say about that is after our case, after I got convicted, he went to work in the DA's office. So that says a lot. You know, you defending us, I believe he sold us out to get a position in the DA office. But, you know, and even though we was in trial, I did think that, you know, the police testified, Michael Huff, he testified that he literally wrestled Michael Wilson down and took the murder weapon out of his hands. And at this time, I'm an 18-year-old naive kid. You know, I'm thinking the judicial system works. So I know I'm innocent. So I'm not thinking I'm going to be convicted. So, you know, he's telling me that he wrestled this guy down for the gun. So I'm like, okay, you know, I'm going to beat it. But it was not until I got found guilty when I'm like, you know, oh, whoa, it's just serious.
How long did the jury deliberate?
Our trial lasted for 5 days. The jury deliberated for 9 hours.
I'm really excited to tell you about my new sponsor, Storyworth. To be honest, I just discovered them myself recently, but now I'm totally hooked. Let me explain. Storyworth is a way to get your loved ones a beautiful hard-covered book filled with stories and memories. This is how it works. You go to the website, storyworth.com, and purchase a subscription for your loved one, like I did for my mom. And then each week, Storyworth emails your loved ones with questions about their life. All they have to do is reply to the email with their story. Or if they're technologically challenged like my mom, they can call and record it over the phone by using the Storyworth number. And there's even an app. And of course, all stories are private and only shared with the people that you choose. Then, when the year is over, the stories will be printed and bound into a beautiful, seriously, it's gorgeous, book and sent to your loved ones. And voila, you have become the best gift giver ever. My mom lives pretty far away, so not only do I think she's going to love this as her Mother's Day gift, but it's also a fun way for us to keep in touch. Plus, I'm excited that we'll have these memories to pass on to future generations. And she loves custom gifts. I'll be sure to keep you updated on my social media on our book's progress. The best part is that if you visit storyworth.com/actual, you can get $20 off when you subscribe. So remember, visit storyworth.com/actual and get started today. And also, be this year's Mother's Day MVP gift giver. Casper is a sleep brand that has created one perfect mattress sold directly to consumers, eliminating commission-driven inflated prices. Plus, its sleek design allows it to be delivered in a small, how did they do that, sized box, straight to you, for free. Yep, free shipping. They also have an adaptive pillow and soft, breathable sheets. The Casper was obsessively engineered in an in-house team of engineers, combining supportive memory foams for a sleep surface that has just the right sink and just the right bounce, and is offered at a shockingly low price. And all of this is done in the United States. It's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress, as evidenced by a 4.8-star rating with over 20,000 reviews. That's really good. The best part is the Casper is free to try for 100 nights risk-free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund everything, so you have nothing to lose. So, Get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/actual and use code actual. Remember, that's casper.com/actual, code actual. I hope you love your Casper as much as I love mine. How did it feel like sitting there knowing that people were saying things that weren't true and there was nothing you could do?
To be honest with you, they were saying things, but I know I was innocent. So I believed that I was going to be found innocent, you know, not guilty. Because regardless of what y'all say, you know, I didn't do this. I know I didn't do it. So I believe that I'm fit to walk. I'm fit to go home at the end of the day. But that was far from the case. And that's when my whole perspective and outlook about the judicial system changed.
And what were you ultimately convicted of?
It was four charges. You had the murder charge, two shooting with intent because two people got shot, and then you had a fourth charge, which was using a vehicle to facilitate discharge of a weapon, which was a drive-by shooting. So we had a life of the murder, 75s, two additional 75-year sentences for the shooting intent, and then a 20 years for the facilitate discharge of a weapon, which is life in 170 years.
How did you feel when they said that?
Oh, I remember when they said guilty, I recall crying. I went back to the cell and cried. It was like, you know, they tell me a life in 170 years, I'm never getting out of prison. You know, I didn't even realize it was such a thing as an appeal until like a few days after I had been found guilty. You know, you listen to the jailhouse lawyers and the other inmates and y'all are beat it on the appeal. And that's when I got hope. I'm like, oh, an appeal? And then I started crying about what is this appeal? Because, you know, I come from nothing, basically. You know, I've never was taught to know about anything about the law. So, you know, that's when they told me appeal. Okay, hey, I do have some action. And that gave me hope.
Like, which prison did you go to?
Oh, I've been to the Max McAllister. You know, they actually have McAllister. It was on OETA one time. You know, while I'm in McAllister, I'm watching how McAllister is on OETA, and it's one of the, at the time, this was in 96, it's one of the most notorious prisons because they have the death row, and a part of the prison is underground. You know, the death row and all that is underground. So, you know, it was terrible.
How did, like, the guards treat you and stuff?
For the most, you have guards. Some of them believe we're human, just like any other people. Then you have some that's, you know, that I guess you can call them assholes, like any other guards. You know, you have certain people that's, you know, certain guards that can be assholes that, you know, treat you and don't care. Like, you're the scum of the earth. You belong in here. They found you guilty. You belong in here.
I can't help but notice that, like, you're a very charismatic person. So, what were the skills? Like, what? How did you cope in prison that let you keep that great attitude that you still have? What did you do?
I do have a great attitude, darling.
Yes, you do.
No, I'm joking. But no, what I did.
And be proud of it. Be proud of it.
No, I am. But for me, what it was, I taught myself. I wasn't the smartest or the brightest, but I did teach myself how to read and write while I was in prison. I ended up getting a GED and accomplishing several other certificates, you know, horticulture and several others. And then what did it for me is writing. I wrote a book, listening to music, working out. And that's what did it for me. That's what kept me sane, kept me focused, you know, by teaching myself how to read and write. You know, I can write to us. I've wrote so many letters, and I mean literally thousands and thousands of letters, you know, from the 90s, from Oprah Winfrey, you know, George Bush, and into, you know, Obama, you know, a few years ago. So, you know, I never gave up hope, you know, because I knew it was a such thing as appeal. So I believed that one day that I could get my appeal and I get my case back in court and I can go home.
And so tell me about that. Tell me what What were the first steps leading to your release?
I wrote you, and I'm telling you, you can contact any Innocence Project around the nation. I'm talking about it's an Innocence Project in Alaska. I wrote them. You name an Innocence Project, I wrote them. I'm like, hey, I'm just the right. Someone needs to hear my story. If they see this evidence, they know we're innocent. So I'm gonna write them. I wrote them. I wrote athletes. I wrote everyone. So it was in Oklahoma City. Oklahoma didn't even have an Innocence Project, but it was in Missouri. I wrote an Innocence Project in Missouri, and I recall getting some feedback in 2004 or 5. They wrote me back. When they wrote me, they asked for a copy of my transcripts. I sent them my copy of my transcripts. They made copies and then sent them back. And then next thing I know, I didn't hear from them for a while. You know, that was in 2004 or 5, you know. So in 2011, when Oklahoma ended up getting the Innocence Project. And some of the staff that was in Missouri came to Oklahoma. And our case was one of the first cases they took in Oklahoma.
Good for you.
Yeah, so, and that was 2011, and it still took 5 years after that. So, you know, that gave me more hope when they on our case fighting for us, and, you know, so, okay, I'm just to get some action, basically. So, you know, I was more optimistic after that.
So what did they do? I mean, when they wrote you back, what did they say?
Well, they asked questions, basically, you know, so whatever they asked, they wanted to know. I told them, you know, and they started investigating leads that led to something else. And it led to this and it led to that. It led to the guys who testified on this. It led to, you know, them recanting the story. And not only did they recant the story, but those initial statements, when the night that this happened, they said they did not see anything. It led to those statements coming out, you know. So this, when they recanted the story, that just back up what their initial statement said.
So how did you get back into court? Was it like, what court method did you use?
The Oklahoma Innocence Project, they filed a newly discovered evidence for us, and that got us back into court and, you know, got us a new trial. And newly discovered evidence is, you know, based plus, you know, the guy had admitted to it, the same guy that got caught with the murder weapon, Michael Wilson, that was executed for another crime, you know, in 2014, you know, he also on his deathbed, as they injected him, you know, lethal injection, he admitted that Malcolm Scott and DeMarco Carpenter are innocent. And that helped as well. And it was so much evidence that didn't come out, you know, 20 some years ago that came out here, you know, because the night that this crime happened, me and Malcolm were on my front porch with two young ladies, you know. And then after he left my house, he went to some apartments where it was one way in, one way out, and you had the signs. And so those records were never confiscated and presented as evidence until 20-some years later.
So how did the new trial go?
Wow. When I first got to the county, it was like, wow. We have a hearing, and then we have to wait. She said the judge wasn't going to make the decision until she viewed all the evidence. So we would set a date when we would come back. That date came, you know, a month later, you know, it was postponed for whatever reason, and that was a letdown. And then the next date came, it was postponed. So 3 months later, you know, we finally got that date, and, you know, it was wonderful. That was when we finally heard that we were going to be exonerated and we were released.
How did that feel?
That was a wonderful. I can still look at the picture. I have a clip of a video of that day. I was walking out, and I can still remember like it was yesterday. And just thinking about it, you know, every time I think about it, I can remember those feelings. It was a wonderful day.
Do you have? Can I see? I put a cover picture on the front of the episode. Can I use that?
Yes, you sure can.
You could send it to me on Facebook if you want.
Okay.
Or you could email it, whatever's easier for you.
Do you remember me? Did I send you that video of me, the video I tried to make for the Celebrity All-Star Game?
No, but I would like to see
what?
It.
You know I'm going to send that to you.
All right, perfect. I'll put it on. I'm going to put it on my website so my listeners can see it too. Okay.
Okay. Wonderful.
So speaking of like what you're doing now, like you've been out about 10 months, 11 months. Is that what you said?
Yes, 11 months.
So how hard is it to get back into like the swing of regular life?
Oh, I'm going to tell you about that. The thing about that is, you know, for 20 years, I had a job on the inside, but it was nothing like a job out here. You get accustomed to doing those and mediocre jobs, taking out trash, and there's nothing, you know, nothing hard, basically. So you get out here and you're going to have to adjust out here with these jobs. And it's like, wow, you know, these is a real job, you know, and some jobs you don't like. I've had like 8 jobs, I mean, literally 8 jobs. And one of my lawyers said, hey, you know, you're going to get a job. If you don't like it, you know, just try to keep that job till you find something else. So, you know, since I've been out, I received a forklift license, an asbestos license. And, you know, because someone told me it wasn't about potential, but it was about credentials. So I need these credentials. So I went and got those licenses. And, you know, I had some warehouse jobs, which, you know, I'm 40 years old now. So my knees and my back is not what they used to be. So I'm working and lifting and I'm trying to stay in shape. I stay working out in the gym, but these jobs, I'm like, well, I really don't like these jobs. So that's what led me to go on to venture out to other jobs. But right now I'm a mental health tech at a hospital. So, you know, this is probably the best job I didn't had to. No, it's definitely the best job I didn't had.
You were in prison for a long time. How did that affect the relationships that you had with your family?
Oh, well, I'm going to tell you about that, too. And it's prison. It will sever a relationship with your family, you know, because you have a license. Plus, you know, your family don't think you're coming home ever. You know, they like, you know, my mom, and a lot of my family, I'm pretty sure, you know, they thought I was never coming home because a lot of them said it to me. They told me that, you know, since I've been out, I thought you was never coming home. So, you know, it was hard. You know, they tend to forget about you. So it's very hard, you know. So, and then the thing for me is a lot of people in prison, we love our family, but at the same time, you know, we're not there to help them. So we have to kind of block them out, so to say. You know, we have to forget about them, and they feel like they can't do nothing for us because they don't have the money, which they don't realize they can help us, you know, just by sending pictures and writing every now and then in the visits. It helped, but, you know, my relationship still with my family isn't, you know, what it used to be. I used to have a wonderful relationship with my family. Now it's like, you know, I really don't know them. You know, I don't know their favorite foods and what colors or what they like to do for fun and vice versa. And I really don't even have the time to try to allow them to get to know them because I'm trying to find a job or work a job and stay busy so I can provide and pay bills.
When you... do you know, is there any kind of compensation in your state, like any standard compensation laws or anything?
Yes, they have what they call the 175K is supposed to be, hopefully I'll receive that in the next 2 months. But if not, you know, I'm still trying to work until I can provide the life that I want to live. But, yeah, they're supposed to give us $175K, but, you know, and then we have a civil suit, which, you know, that's down the line. You know, I haven't even really spoke to too many people about that, so.
I have 2 more questions for you, but do you have anything else you want to talk about that I didn't ask you first?
I want to see what I've been doing, too. You know, I've never been to the zoo. I was able to go to the Oklahoma City Zoo. I went to KOCO, that's a news channel in Oklahoma City. And one of the viewers saw that, you know, I had never went to the zoo. So they gave us tickets and I was able to go to the zoo. And another thing is...
What was your favorite animal?
Oh, man. You seen them elephants? They're huge.
Yes, and they're gorgeous. I love elephants.
And the giraffes, it was just... I'm talking about all of them. The lions, everything. It was just like amazing. But then after the zoo... I went back and did a follow-up on KOCO, and I talked about wanting to attend a Thunder game. The Oklahoma City Thunder basketball, Russell Westbrook, you know, Anthony Morrow at the time, he's been traded, you know. But all these guys, they saw my story. They reached out to me and Malcolm, and we was able to go to an Oklahoma Thunder game. They gave us jersey tickets. You know, they signed our jerseys, and it was, man, they was Anthony Morrow and Russell Westbrook. You know, you see them on the court on TV playing, but then to see them and then to meet them, they're so down to earth. And the thing about Russell Westbrook that I really liked is when he came out, he saw us over there waiting. And, okay, I'm going to get to y'all first, but he's really a family man. He went over there and hugged his family, his fiance at the time, I believe they got married. And then he came over there, but that was like, okay, that was, you know, he's a family guy. And I admired that about him. But, you know, being able to meet them guys, that was awesome.
That's incredible. And that's incredible that they did that for you. I mean, nothing can give you your time back, but it's really great for people to help you make good memories for the future.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I'm trying to go to another Thunder game. I need to hang out with Westbrook more often.
I wish I knew somebody. So, hey, everybody listening, if you know anybody, let's get the hookup in here.
I need to go hang out with Russell Westbrook. Man, I need to. I also want to meet Denzel Washington, Ice Cube, too. That's my favorite rapper, Ice Cube. Denzel, yeah. My favorite actor. I'm trying to go hang out with them, too, meet them one day, and maybe be on Dr. Phil's show.
That would be cool.
That would be cool.
So, are you ready for my last two questions?
No. As you know, I talk a lot, right? People tell me I talk a lot.
Oh, yeah, by all means. Go ahead.
Yes, listen. You know, since I've been out, I don't know if I showed you my stomach.
Your stomach?
Yes, but I got shot with an AK. I got shot with an AK when I was 16 years old, right?
No, I did not know that.
Yes, I was shot with an AK. My stomach is it's all type of pieces. You would have to see it. I wore a colostomy bag, too. And at the time of this crime, I had a colostomy bag. I was in no physical shape to even commit this crime. I had a brace on my arm, a colostomy bag, which I wore for 3 years, year and a half of that, maybe 2 years, you know, incarcerated.
Wow. I bet that was rough to take care of that. My mom had one for a while, and you know, it's not an easy thing to take care of all the time.
Oh, no. And can you imagine 16-year-old, 17-year-old kids, you know, what I have to, you know, low self-esteem kids who run you. So that was really rough. But since I've been out, I talk to the youth. I'm going to, you know, the middle school I went to is the elementary, and I'm going to my high school, and I'm talking to the kids, and I actually will be there again, Hamilton Elementary, May the 3rd, and I go back and try to give back. I'm trying to pay it forward, you know, by leading these kids, getting them on the right path, because a lot of them, you know, they don't have any role models to look up to, and I'm just like y'all, come from where y'all come from, you know, they can relate to me, so I'm trying to give back to the kids, the youth, pay it forward.
Good for you. Good for you.
Okay, I'm ready for your last question, or your last two, or maybe not.
Are you sure you don't have anything else?
No, I always have a lot to say, but if I think I will say it, but yes, I'm ready now.
Okay, so my first question is, what advice would you give to someone who finds himself being accused or convicted of something they didn't do?
Oh, it's simple. Never give up. Just that simple. Never give up, because I was in that position and, you know, the life sentence and not knowing when I would get out, but I never gave up, you know. I put my faith in God, and I never gave up.
Okay. Are you ready for the last one? It's a thinker.
Yes.
What can the average person, like me, or the people listening to us right now, what can they do to help support people who have been wrongly convicted?
Oh, yes, that's the easy one. A lot of people don't think that they can help, but, you know, any dollar helps. You know, the Oklahoma Innocence Project are understaffed and underpaid, but, you know, it's people, you know, who can donate money to the Innocence Project. If you can donate whatever, you know, it all helps. It's as simple as that, donating to the Oklahoma Innocence Project or any Innocence Project, wherever Innocence Project is close to your region.
You know, The very first thing that you said was one of the best answers I've ever heard to that question, because you said people don't think that they can help, but really everybody can do something, and you're right. You're right. They can.
Yeah.
All right. You got anything else for me? Are we done?
No. Okay. I got one more thing. If anyone can help me, I'm trying to get tickets to the Oklahoma City Thunder game or any game. If anybody want to go, I'll fly to Cleveland and watch LeBron. If somebody can get me tickets to wherever, you know, but hey, I'm gonna show up with my Thunder jersey on because that's my squad, Russell Westbrook all the way, Thunder up. But if anybody has tickets to anyone, help me out. Donate some tickets. Thank you. That's all.
Be sure to listen all the way through to the end to hear the trailer for the new podcast that I mentioned, They Walk Among Us. But until next time, I'm Brooke. Thanks for listening. A special thanks to our sponsors, Simply Safe, Storyworth, and Casper for sponsoring today's episodes. Remember, if you can't support our sponsors financially, you can still help by giving them a shout out on social media. Visit our website, ActualInPod, for more information and check out our new podcast, Convicted, on your favorite podcast app. Our theme song is by Andy Cohen. Until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Thanks again, and always, for listening.
They Walk Among Us is a podcast exploring the UK's most sinister and surreal crimes, including the woman who killed a boyfriend as he spent too much time on Facebook, to the teenage boys whose online relationship involves spies, sex, and the near-fatal stabbing of one of them. Subscribe on iTunes or your favourite podcast provider.